Ya yo no sé, ya yo Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari, Yashoda Nandana Brajana Rajana. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Vandachari Yamuna Tira Vandachari Jayo Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Vishwa Paramahamsa Pavrita Chakacharya Shrata Shrata Shishima Desi Bhakti Vedanta Swami Shri Prabhupada Ki Jaya Jaya Vishwa Paramahamsa Pavrita Chakacharya Shrata Shrata Shishima Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Maharaj ki jai. Ananta Goti Vaishnava Vrinda ki jai. Nama Acharya Shri Haridas Thakur ki jai. Iskum Bibhiti Founder Acharya Hisangare Shri Prabhupada ki jai. Prem Sikho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasari Ghor Bhakti Vrinda ki jai. Shishi Radha Krishna Gopa Gopinath Shyamakunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan ki jai. Vrindavan Dham ki jai. Mayapur Dham ki jai. Gangamaya Munamaya ki jai, Tulasi Devi Bhakti Devi ki jai, Shri Harinam Sankirtan Yagya ki jai, Gaur Premanandi Hari Hari Bol, Ogur Samrivotis, Ogur Samrivotis, Ogur Samrivotis, Ogur Sogurish Shri Guru and Gaurangam. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Buddham Pumso Nirvinam
Buddham Pumso Nirvinam
Mitro Lokesha Avisha
Mitro Lokesha Avisha
Payunam Shena Yaneasu
Payunam Shena Yaneasu
Visargam Pratipadyate
Thank you.
Nirvinam. Being separately manifested. Mitram. The sun god. Lokaisham. The director named Mitra. Avishad. Enter. Payuna amsenam. With the partial evacuation process. Yenam. By which? Asahum. The living entity. Visargam. Evacuation. Patipadyate. Performs. Translation. The evacuating channel separately became manifest, and the director named Mitra entered into it with partial organs of evacuation. Thus the living entities are able to pass stool and urine. So we will continue chanting the following four verses. Let's chant Sanskrit together. Hasta asya nirvinam indra svapatir avisa vartyam sena purusha yaya vikim prapadyate. Thereafter, when the hands of the gigantic form separated became manifested, Indra, the ruler of the heavenly planets, entered into them. And thus the living entity is able to transact business for his livelihood. Pada asya vinirbinam loke sa vishnu avisa tatya samshena purusham jaya pratyam prapadyate. Thereafter, the legs of the gigantic form separately became manifest, and the demigod named Vishnu, not the personality of Godhead, entered with partial movement. This helps the living entity move to his destination. Budim chasya nirbinam vagisha visham avisha bodhanam sena bodhavyam pratipati yato bhavet. When the intelligence of the gigantic form separately became manifest, Brahma, the lord of the Vedas, entered into it with the partial power of understanding, and thus an object of understanding is experienced by the living entities. That's 24. Hridayam chasya nirbinam chandrama dhishnyamavishad mana samshena yanasu vikriyam pratipadyate. After that, the heart of the gigantic form separately manifested itself, and into it entered the moon demigod with partial mental activity. Thus the living entity can conduct his mental speculations. And 25. Atmanam chasya nirbinam abhimano vishatpadam karmanam sena yenasu kartavyam pratipadyate. Thereafter, the materialistic ego of the gigantic form separately manifested itself, and into it entered Rudra, the controller of false ego, with his own partial activities, by which the living entity transacts his objective actions. And here we have a purport. The false ego of materialistic identity is controlled by the demigod Rudra, an incarnation of Lord Shiva. Rudra is the incarnation of the Supreme Lord who controls the mood of ignorance within material nature. The activities of the false ego are based on the objective of the body and mind. Most persons conducted by the false ego are controlled by Lord Shiva. When one reaches a finer version of ignorance, he falsely thinks of himself as the Supreme Lord. That egoistic conviction of the conditioned soul is the last snare of the illusory energy which controls the entire material world. Gudam pumso vinirbinam mitro lokesha avisam payunam shena yenasu visargam pratipadyate.
The evacuating channels separately became manifest and the directed name Mitra entered into it with partial organs of evacuation. Thus the living entities are able to pass stool and urine.
Om Jnana Timirandasya Gnanjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Vancha Kalpatarubhyasya Kipvasi Nivayavacha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Agaita Gadadhara Shivasari Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, everybody. On this beautiful rainy day, sorry for technical difficulties with the sound, but I hope you can hear me clearly, and we can say a few words. So we are continuing the description of Lord's universal form, Vishvarupa. And as it's been discussed in the previous verses, basically we can see that the living entity in this material world is fully controlled by the devatas, demigods. I was listening to Ram Govinda Prabhu. He very nicely explained yesterday how we can actually perceive this connection between the human beings and all the living entities that we see around us and the higher entities who are actually controlling on behalf of the Supreme Lord. But not only that, more important than that, he said the demigods are actually great devotees, so we should never view them, they are just some materialistic, bhaktas. No, absolutely not. They are actually very, very exalted personalities. And therefore, they've been entrusted such high and responsible duties. Prabhupada, actually, even in chapter 5 that we already read earlier, he's actually saying, Okay, well, this is much, much better. I'm sorry. So we can see that the universe is very, very well organized. In other words, everything is done in perfect and ordered sequence. Recently, I was just amazed observing the beauty of azalea flowers. We see them, blooming this time of the year. And in my neighborhood, pretty much every house has a very mature azalea bushes. So recently, Kalindi decorated our altar, and we had azaleas, you know, covering pretty much the entire altar. And I was just amazed how perfectly they're constructed. If you observe, there is five petals, and they're perfectly shaped, form and design. And you can see, interestingly, if you think, you know, we are chanting 108 malas on our japa, and all these numbers, they're not just some incidental numbers. You know, if you think Krishna married 16,108 wives in Dwarka, you know, you may think, why that number? You know, why didn't he marry 16,700 wives? Why are we chanting 16 rounds? Why not 14? Why not 17? Why not, you know, 7? So, you know, we shouldn't assume that Prabhupada just pulled his numbers from, you know, thin air. No, there's a reasoning behind it. Actually, even modern science, they discovered what they call as a golden ratio. And it's 1.618. It's a famous Fibonacci number. And we can see if you multiply that number by 10,000, it comes exactly 16,108. Pretty close to that. And on the other hand, if you divide, thank you, Mahima. If you divide 108 by 2, you get 64. If you divide 64 by 4, what do you get? 16. So everything is very, very sequential. Everything is perfectly organized. Krishna is not some chaotic person that, you know, just throws the elements into the universe and boom. Absolutely not. Everything he does is meticulously and perfectly organized, beautifully organized, same as azalea flower. So the interesting thing is, one thing that modern scientists, they actually finally figured it out, that the Fibonacci numbers themselves, they're not just something that Italian mathematician discovered. They actually existed much, much earlier before. Actually, it's said that in 200 BC, there was a great Acharya Pingala, that he was an Indian mathematician as well. But the way he actually came to conclusion was by studying the Sanskrit poetry. Sanskrit poetry, and he figured out that that pattern is repeated over and over. So the universe is very, very perfectly organized. And the intelligent human beings should actually realize there is a higher purpose behind it. And if we do recognize that, then we can live in a very harmonious way in this material world. On the other hand, when the human beings neglect that higher understanding, they are destined to live in a state of disharmony, pain and suffering. There is a very interesting experiment, basically, that all first-year graduate students of psychology have to perform. And essentially, they are given task. Basically, they are told, you have to motivate the rat. The rat is the object of experiment. And the reason is basically if they can learn how to handle the rats, perhaps they can in the future learn how to handle the humans. Because humans are not much smarter apparently when it comes to psychology. So the task is, they are told, first you have to educate the rats, then you have to motivate them, that's the first thing, then you have to educate them, and then lastly you have to frustrate them. So how they do it? They do it essentially, you know, basically the animal is not motivated, so they starve it, no food for a day or two. And the poor creature is starving, and of course, you know, the anger is very powerful motivation. Then they put the rat in the maze, and they hide the cheese on one end. And of course, the rat is intelligent, he smells the cheese, and he starts running, and trying to figure his way how to get to the cheese. And finally, he catches it. And then what happens? Then he becomes unmotivated again. Because, you know, he's materialistic, he doesn't have a higher vision of and purpose in his life. So unless there is a food, and same thing as we can see in the Kali Yuga, humans are in the Tamagun, essentially the only things that motivate them is the food and sex. So that is kind of the fundamental principle of economic development in Kali Yuga. So basically then they would place the cheese again, and they would do that several times till the rat would become educated rat. He would discover his way how to find the cheese, and he would do it very efficiently after, you know, several trials. Now the final stage comes where basically the rat is, actually the student is told, you have to frustrate the rat and see what will be his behavior. So at that point they remove the cheese from the maze, and again, because we are creatures of the habit, the rat starts running, but at this point there is no cheese at the end. So when he comes, he's frustrated, and he thinks, I've done everything same. I repeated exactly same sequence. I walk the same path I do every day, but there is no sense pleasure. So, interestingly, why am I telling you this story? Because the humans have very similar psychology, and and actually they concluded after doing these tests that after, you know, a rat being frustrated, you know, maybe like 10 times, eventually he will try something new. But surprisingly, humans are even more stupid. Sometimes humans will stay in the same tunnel vision, and they will not change their habits, even though they may be destructive. Like we know very well how people get certain addictions to alcohol, drugs, smoking, this, that, any kind of addiction that can actually ruin someone's life is very, very detrimental. So in that sense, the rats are very intelligent. After several frustrating experiences, they will actually realize, I gotta look for cheese somewhere else. So anyhow, the point is, we find a very interesting conversation in the 11th canto, Uddhava Gita, wonderful verses, where Krishna is actually instructing Uddhava, and he's telling him, my dear Uddhava, I have given three paths that lead to perfection. And interestingly, you will hear in just a minute how there is so much similarity to our experiment that we just discussed, because Maya, she is the best psychologist. She knows exactly how to lead the living entity through a series of experiences where eventually the living entity should become frustrated, and if intelligent and pious, then should start to inquire about the absolute truth, which is the ultimate goal. So essentially, therefore, Maya makes arrangements where the living entity first gets motivated, you know, there is some sense pleasure, then it's educated how to gather the, you know, facilities for sense enjoyment in this material world. But ultimately, all of that leads to frustration. That is like perfectly well laid out plan in material world. All right, so I wanted to share with you a few verses where Krishna is essentially instructing Uddhava. And Krishna is saying, my dear Uddhava, because I desire that human beings may achieve perfection, I have presented three paths of advancement: the path of knowledge, the path of work, and the path of devotion. Besides these three, there is absolutely no other means of elevation. And then Krishna is saying, among these three paths, Jnana Yoga, the path of philosophical speculation, is recommended for those who are disgusted with material life and are thus detached from ordinary fruitive activities. Those who are not disgusted with material life, having many desires yet to fulfill, should seek perfection through path of karma yoga. And then Krishna is saying, if somehow or other, by good fortune, one develops faith in hearing and chanting my glories, such a person, being neither disgusted with nor very much attached to material life, should achieve perfection through the path of loving devotion to me. So, and then basically Krishna is saying the famous verse, Nrideham Madhyam Su Labam Su Sudalabam Plavam Su Kalpam Guru Karnadaram Maya Nukulena Naba Svataritam Puman Bhavam Bim Na Karat Saat Maha. Krishna is saying, the human body, which can award all benefit in life, is automatically obtained by the laws of nature, although it is a very rare achievement. This human body can be compared to perfectly constructed boat, having the spiritual master as the captain, and the instructions of the personality of Godhead as favorable winds impelling it on its course. Considering all these advantages, a human being who does not utilize his human life to cross the ocean of material existence must be considered the killer of his own soul. Very nice verses. So, we have a few more minutes. So basically in the last verse we read, the verse 25, I believe, yes. Srila Prabhupada is actually writing purport. As you may notice, some of the verses have no purport, but this verse had actually purport. And Prabhupada is saying one very interesting point here. He's saying, when one reaches finer version of ignorance, have you ever heard that? Finer version of ignorance. I like it so much, how Prabhupada so nicely, in descriptive manner, presents his points. So when one reaches finer version of ignorance, he falsely thinks of himself as the Supreme Lord. That egoistic conviction of the conditioned soul is the last snare of the illusory energy which controls the entire material world. Very interesting. So this false ego is very, very powerful. And we can see all these conflicts in the material world on the individual level, between people, sometimes even in a family, husband and wife arguing just because of the ego. Then even on the bigger scale, we can see the nations, they also have false ego. I mean, if you analyze all these conflicts globally taking place, it's predominantly because of egoistic mentality. And there is no conversation. There is, when there is an ego, essentially it's like a brick wall. The information is not penetrating to the other side. So there is no communication. And a perfect example we can see throughout the history, Prahlad Maharaj, he was giving wonderful instructions to his father, but he could not take it. No, nothing, no, zero. The other example, Ravana, his brother Vibhishan, he was giving him wonderful instructions, but nothing would reach him. Same thing with Kamsa. Vasudeva was trying to give him good counsel, but he was, you know, so demoniac, he was about to kill his own sister. So we can see how false ego is very, very destructive. There's one famous story which I like to share with you. Great, great emperor, Genghis Khan, the Mongol emperor leader, basically. As you probably know through studying the history, he was the actually one who conquered the biggest mass of land on the planet Earth, even greater than Napoleon or Alexander the Great. And it's explained that actually he conquered pretty much entire land from Pacific Ocean to Adriatic Sea, which essentially covers China, Russia. He actually even conquered some parts of northern India, then, you know, to Eastern Europe, down to, you know, ancient Persian region. So he was very, very powerful and very actually intelligent. It's not like he was, you know, just some foolish guy who was, you know, just going using force, but he was actually very strategic in organizing his military, and essentially he knew how to inspire people. It's actually said that in his army he welcomed Buddhists, Christians, Muslims, and all other tribes. And yeah, so basically, where I'm going here. In his old age, after he already conquered all the lands, there was something that happened that actually made him ponder on the meaning of life. So one day he was out with his soldiers in a hunting trip in a forest. And as they were going through the forest, you know, they were looking, you know, for the animals to hunt. And somehow they couldn't find not even one. So they were a little bit, you know, morose, frustrated. And it was kind of like, you know, the day was closing to the end, and everybody was so you know, uninspired. And instead of, you know, throwing his rage and frustration on his fellow soldiers, he told them, okay, so you guys go back and I'll stay behind, and I'll come later on. So he started kind of going around the forest by himself, and he was very hungry and very thirsty. And he, at one point, he noticed one trickle of water coming from the rocks, and he thought, oh, finally, there's, you know, some water at least, you know, this horrible day. At least, you know, let me, you know, satisfy my thirst. So he pulled his silver cup, which he was always carrying with him, and he was holding it, and it was very, very slow trickle. You know, it wasn't like, you know, current faucet, you just, you know, it took him, you know, long time to fill the cup. And as he was about to drink, his pet, he had a pet falcon bird that Mongolians, they were actually expert in training the birds to help them in their hunting adventures. So as he was about to drink, his falcon flew and he knocked the cup down off his hand. And he was starting like, oh my gosh, like, what's this crazy bird doing? So he didn't, you know, he didn't understand, and he thought, oh, maybe he's thirsty too, but, you know, what to do? So he started again. He took the cup, he started to fill the cup, and slowly, you know, drop by drop, and finally came maybe half full, and he was thinking, oh my goodness, you know, let me finally drink. But again, his falcon flew, and he knocked the cup out of his hand. And then he started getting angry. And he thought, if my soldiers see me, you know, I'm the conqueror of the oldest land. But if they see me, you know, being so weak and unable to even control this stupid bird, what are they going to think about me? Do we sometimes think like that? Like, you know, oh my gosh, if people perceive me, I'm, you know, foolish space out. you know, we get a little bit mental, you know, behavior. But it's all because of the ego. Because if you have no ego, we would think, you know, after all, I'm fool. You know, I'm just humble servant of the servant. You know, so what do people think? Whatever they want to think. So anyhow, so Genghis Khan, he was thinking, I should do something, because if the soldiers see that I'm so weak and unable to control this bird, they're gonna actually rebel against me. So he pulled his sword, and in one hand he was filling the cup, and in the other hand he was holding the sword, and he was thinking, if this bird comes again, that will be it. And that's exactly what happened. As he was about to drink for the third time, the bird flew, and he struck it with his sword. And sadly enough, the falcon was dead. And also, his cup was again on the ground. So he was again frustrated. So finally, something went into his head, like a green light. And he started thinking, like, why is this happening to me? And he decided to climb up the rocks where the source of water was, and he wanted to see what is going on. And as he approached, he found one of the most deadly poisonous snakes lying dead in that little pond. And he realized, my goodness, my friend, my well-wisher, he was trying to save me. Because if I was about to drink even one drop of that water, I would be dead from the deadly poisonous snake that was in the water. So at that point, he had a big change of heart. He started crying. He went down and he picked his dead falcon, and he held it like in his arms, and he was literally crying. He took the bird all the way back to his kingdom, and he told his goldsmith to design the form of his falcon from the gold, and on its wings to inscribe the following words. On one of the wings, he said basically, whatever is done out of anger leads only to ruin. Whatever is done out of anger leads only to ruin. And then on the other wing, he had a message inscribed, and it says, a well-wisher is always a well-wisher, even when we don't see how his deeds are in our interest. Very interesting words, because as we know, Srila Prabhupada, our beloved Srila Prabhupada, when he would write letters to his disciples, he would always write, your well-wisher. And we can see how Krishna sends his most dear representative to this world to help us. Sometimes we may understand the message, sometimes we may not. But we have to always remind ourselves that well-wisher is always well-wisher. So, The final point I would just like to share with you is actually from this beautiful book, Light of Bhagavatam. If you have not read it, please read it. It's a wonderful, wonderful book. So, in this book, basically there is a text number 36, and it says, and it's actually related to our topic today, which is false ego. Because Krishna consciousness is very, very practical process. It's not something, you know, that we just assume or hope or, you know, like, maybe it's like that, maybe. No, everything is perfectly laid out, organized. We just have to follow it. And the medicine does work. So, the text number 36 is saying following words. It says, with the progress of the autumn season, the moist earth and the muddy places begin to dry up, and the green vegetation begins to fade. This drying up and fading resembles the gradual disappearance of the false sense of affinity and ego. I love this metaphor here, because it's comparing how the false ego can actually be dissolved. And then Prabhupada is basically commenting later, he's saying, progress in a spiritual culture brings about the disintegration of false ego and material attraction. So essentially, by the cultivation of the spiritual culture, the false ego gradually dissolves. Just like if you put something in water, eventually it starts dissolving. So, I know it's late, so I'm going to stop here. If anybody would like to say a few words, any comments, any questions, feel free to say something.
Thank you, Prabhu, for your intriguing stories that you always relay to us. Thank you. Do you have any realization of this word partial in all of these verses? Except it wasn't in the verse regarding Indra. Interesting.
Thank you so much for pointing on that. And yes, I noticed that being used in several of the verses, partial potency being invested from devotees and so on. To be honest, I don't know the perfect answer. Perhaps one of the senior devotees may enlighten us about that. But the only thing I could guess, because the demigods, they essentially give only as much power as needed to living entities to perform certain functions. So in that regard, I would think perhaps that's why Prabhupada is using that word partial. But again, probably there is a better explanation than that. Anybody would like to comment more on this? I don't know. We can ask Pranagovinda next time. I think the most amazing thing when we are going through this verse is actually to realize the connection, how we are part of this universe, how we are part of this nature. And we can see the human society, the further we go out of touch with the surrounding, with the nature around us, the destruction is greater. People think that, you know, they can do anything, they can unlimitedly pull the oil out of the earth and mine the precious metals and think that there's not going to be any consequences, which is completely foolishness. It's kind of like cutting the branch on which we are sitting on the tree ourselves. But anyhow, I think we can end it here, unless somebody would like to say something. And once again, happy birthday to you. So, Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaur Premanandi.